Meow. 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 This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Derek? Can you feel it?
Ooh, I can feel it, Davi.
It's true. 365 degrees is a degree for every day of the year, so that's quite a toasty temperature. This is a reminder that Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT no-gov license, which allows reuse by anyone except for governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Worms.
How's it going, Derek?
I'm feeling good. How are you?
I'm doing good. We should probably mention our radio names. I am the Shiny Badger, and you are the Warrant Canary.
Tweet, tweet. Yes, and I have not been contacted by the government in these last 24 hours. I remain unmolested.
I've not been contacted by the government, but I have been contacted by another proxy of the government, and that is FedEx sending me a tax bill. This happens from time to time. I never understand why private corporations comply with these sorts of things.
Maybe they just pretend to. They just have to on face. Like, maybe they won't try very hard. They just have to send you this letter.
They don't. They send me a letter every month or so. Sometimes they forget. Sometimes they lose their records, but... You know,
they're way nicer about it than the government is, though, when they send their letters. There was a...
Yeah, that's true.
There was a government man near my property recently today, though. I mean, I haven't been contacted by the government, but I did interact with some government agent today. He was a code enforcer who lives here in Keene, New Hampshire. And my neighbor... I saw him standing next to my neighbor's car, and I was hanging out with my neighbor at the time, so... We went over, like, hey, what's going on? You know, and I'm video recording, of course. And he's like, oh, are you the owner of this car? Basically saying that it needs to move because it was parked on the guy's lawn. And the code enforcer decided that's not okay. You can't use your property as you see fit. You can't park your property on your property the way you want. You have to do it the way this stranger from City Hall wants. So it was really weird, but it was just a warning. He was really nice by not issuing a fine to this friend. But I think it's weird that there's even a guy whose job that is at all to go around and tell other people, like, that's not okay. You can't park there. As if it's
hey, you know, if
problem.
That's all it takes to be considered nice, I didn't issue you a fine today either.
Thanks. You're so nice. It is weird, though. It's like there is a bit of a Stockholm syndrome in being like, oh, whew, thank you. Like, you know, like, why am I thanking this guy for not issuing a fine to my friend? Like, 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, that should be like the standard. The leave you alone should be the baseline, right?
Yeah, but somehow I'm like thankful that this guy, and I know him, he's issued me tickets for parking violations on my own property. Like, I had the nose of my car sticking out a little bit onto the sidewalk, and he was writing it. He wrote me a ticket for that, saying, like, what if there's someone with a wheelchair? What if there's someone with a stroller? They need to get around on the sidewalk, and they have to walk on the grass. I mean, that could really injure them. So it's like, okay, Mr. Code Enforcer Man, thank you.
Wild.
Yeah.
I haven't looked into it yet because I generally don't look into these things, but I heard a rumor that Governor Brown here in California just passed a bunch of new ordinances, one of which is going to be fining people for taking long showers.
What?
I have no idea how they're going to discover how long my shower is. I mean, like, even if they manage to get some sort of like a sensor on my shower head, how do they know that I was taking a shower and not like filling a waterbed or something?
Like, yeah. Well, didn't they install those smart meter things that people were worried that the utility companies were going to be monitoring how people use their utilities? Like, if you measure somebody's water in the morning, you know, let's say between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m., you can estimate that that's probably shower taking time, right? And that's probably where they get their calculations from.
I don't know about that. I live on my own schedule.
Yeah. Well, they can't figure you out, Davi. So Governor Jerry Brown isn't coming for you. He's coming for the more predictable people.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel a little, maybe I should have like researched this before reporting on it. I hear these things on like AM radio and things when I'm like going around, and I can't even be bothered to look up what the ordinances are. It's just like, it's like living in some sort of like a Kafka novel or something. Like, I don't know what's going on in California.
Very much so. I remember reading from the Institute of Justice that they were celebrating some victory in California over people being able to bake goods in their own homes, like cookies and treats and stuff, make things from their own homes and sell them. And they were celebrating this as if this was some like newfound freedom, like people could make things and sell them. Like, what? Wow. Hasn't this happened for all of human history? But it's like, I guess it's been forbidden for so long in California. People are so used to not freedom that just a little taste of it is something to celebrate. Well, why do you live there?
It's a novel idea.
It's so weird. I think of California as such a wonderful place.
I was born here. I think that's the only reason.
Yeah. It's so nice there in so many ways, but it's weird that people tolerate such a lack of freedom. And it seems to be moving in a velocity, like there's a direction to it, right? Like, is it just my imagination, or is there less and less freedom in California over time?
Well, there's less and less freedom over time, seems like everywhere. So I don't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I think the difference is that here, the culture begs for it. whereas in other places, people kind of like grudgingly accept it and move on with their lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a funny thing. So there's like, people are very upset with corporations like Nestle and things that have the audacity to like bottle water and then sell it. Because they think that water is, of course, an inalienable human right. And so Nestle should bottle water and give it away for free. never mind the cost involved in, you know, like cleaning and bottling and, you know, shipping and, you know, the whole production involved. That should all right. be free. But these same people who are upset at Nestle for selling water are celebrating restaurants that are now charging for water because the restaurants are doing it with the intention of conserving. See, if they charge you an extra dollar for that glass of water with your dinner, you're going to drink less water. And that means we're going to, I don't know, like I can't imagine that California is going through a drought because people drink water with dinner. But
wow.
It's so funny to me that the same people will decry the corporation for charging for water and celebrate the restaurant for charging for water for the same reason.
I think you've really hit on something. Like, what if paper companies and, you know, other hated industries by these environmentalists just changed their marketing a bit and said, you know, buy our paper, it goes towards conservation. You know, because it does, right?
Yeah. What if Nestle just said, you know what? We're going to raise the price of water to force people to use less of it to conserve water.
Right. All the environmentalists would be scratching their heads like, we support that.
Well, I think what they would really be doing is looking right and left to see who else was supporting it and then getting on whichever bandwagon ended up louder.
Yeah. Well, what are the celebrities saying? What do the hottest people think?
I'll yeah, what does Justin that. Bieber say? What does... yeah, so goes Hollywood, so goes the nation. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Yeah, and Hollywood is one of the branches of government. So...
So, yeah, I don't really know what to make of that. It's interesting to me... Like, I don't know, do you think that there's an overlap between the cake controversy with, like, the gay wedding cake thing and the you're now allowed to bake cakes in your own house thing?
No, there's no relation.
No overlap.
No. I mean, unless people are going to be forced in their own homes to make cakes against their will, which would be like...
That would be pretty... That would be, you know... We're being forced to take shorter showers. I don't know why we couldn't be forced to mix some flour and water together.
That really is a Kafka novel. Some like telescreen barking at you to be more tolerant as you are forced to.
See, this is the other thing. There are lawn ordinances which require that your lawn be within a certain spectrum of shades of green. Otherwise, you're said to be neglectful. But there are also lawn ordinances which limit the amount of water you're allowed to put on.
Must be green.
So,
but not too
green. Possible, these two things would be impossible to comply.
Those are my favorite, are like self-contradictory laws that you really can't obey because you violate some other one. I can't think of an example at the moment, but that is one.
A lot of the handicapped access ordinances are so diverse because there are both federal, state, and local versions of these ordinances that it's actually impossible to comply with all of them in a lot of jurisdictions.
Oh, yeah. So what do? I guess you just have to comply with whatever bureaucrat has most recently walked into your business.
Yeah, that's really it. I mean, that's really it, you know, top to bottom. You just comply with the most recent bureaucrat to threaten you. I think that's the way law works.
Yeah, that's what it is with this guy. So, like, I brought him up earlier, but this is the code enforcer here in Keene. Keene's a small town, so we know each other, and I see him on a regular basis. But I work at a thrift store here, which was threatened when we opened up. We put up a sign, and the same code enforcer drove down and was like, you can't have that sign here. And, so the government...
You can't say that.
Yeah, well, the business just... It wants to serve its customers, but if a bureaucrat walks in and makes demands, like, that's what we have to do at the moment. So, yeah, it is just whatever bureaucrat threatens us.
I mean, I suppose it would be the same as if the mafia walked in. I mean, like, if the bureaucrat came in one day and said, hey, you have to take a 3-minute shower, and the next day the mafia came in and said, hey, you have to take a 6-minute shower. I'm taking a 6-minute shower that day.
Well, at least the mafia makes demands that make a little bit more sense or like a little more grounded in reality. They're like, we want money, so give us money. You know, that's a little more basic. But the government, sometimes it's really strange things. Like, you take shorter showers. Like, how dare you? I'd rather you just say, give me money. You know, at least that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me about the thrift store. What was the sign?
It was a sign for our business. It was, it's okay to put a sign on the front of the building, but the side of the building, oh no, that's not allowed. Not without a permit, you see.
Well, we'll cover that and other exciting eventualities after the break.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends with me, Dobby Barker, the Shiny Badger, and my co-host, Derek J., the Warrant Canary.
Worms.
You want to tell me about this event in New Hampshire you're going to?
Yeah, so I'm excited about free candy with Vermin Supreme and Rand Paul. I'm not sure what the event is really about, but I see free candy and I'm there. So apparently, according to Facebook... Vermin Supreme will be giving away free candy, and that's in all caps. Come and join Vermin Supreme at Rand Paul's first visit to the Granite State. Help give away free candy. Rand Paul is expected to endorse Vermin Supreme for president in exchange for free candy.
Expected by who and for what reason?
I don't know, but I'm excited. I'll be there to watch the endorsement happen. And hopefully capture some good video. This is happening in Milford Town Hall Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. So be there if you're in the New Hampshire area. I imagine it will be fun.
Is this going to be like a debate or something? I think it'd be really interesting to see if you could determine who was the more principled Liberty candidate, Rand Paul or Vermin Supreme.
Yeah, I wonder if there will be a question and answer session, really, because that would be the greatest opportunity if I could actually ask Rand and Vermin questions about their candidacy and their campaigns. And I doubt that Rand has a better answer prepared for his like energy solution for the future. Vermin has a pretty good one. It's been unchanged, I think, for the last few years, running on the power of the awesomeness of zombies. Do I have that right?
Yeah, zombie turbine.
Right.
You put a zombie in a hamster wheel, you hang dangle some meat in front of it, and just turns the turbine, goes forever. It's like perpetual motion.
Yeah, so he's really got this
figured out.
They're
a really underutilized resource.
Yeah. And of course, it's no surprise that this candidate comes from New Hampshire. I dig Vermin's shtick, his whole thing. It's like, it trips me out. I've met him twice in person, and he's the only person, I swear, who has made me completely starstruck and speechless. Both times, I've like forgotten my name, I can't speak. I always am quick with a camera to pop that out and start recording when I see something like police abuse. With him, I never get it in time, and I can't video record. For those who don't know him, like, how would you describe Vermin Supreme? What's your characterization of him?
Well, I'd like his characterization of himself, and that is, if all politicians are vermin, you should absolutely vote for the Vermin Supreme. I don't know. He's like a jester, sort of. Or, he reminds me of Monty Python a little bit. But
yeah.
Sort of an American flavor. But, I'm curious to know what Rand Paul's opinion of Vermin Supreme's mandatory toothbrushing policy would be.
Yeah, that sounds a little too socialist for Rand. He would probably oppose that. And honestly, I don't know how I feel about it either. This secret police Gestapo coming around enforcing mandatory toothbrush laws. I'm all for toothbrushing, but it sounds like a big government program.
Well, you know, I'm waiting for the day when Vermin Supreme's satirical policy becomes the stated policy of California. I don't think that day is very far away.
Yeah, it's right around
the
corner. It'll
be one like high profile case where like some eccentric set of parents is like, "Oh no, we don't brush our kids' teeth because fluoride." And then all of California will be in an uproar over parents who neglect brushing their kids' teeth, and next thing you know, it'll be mandatory, and you know, companies like Crest and Arm & Hammer will be lobbying for their little piece of the pork in the bill, and, and next thing you know, there'll be like an official California toothpaste, and it'll be obligatory.
Yeah, I wonder how they would are they going to impose a fine on people who showers too long, or like, are they just going to send him a bill in the mail? Would it be
that's
the same?
He said $500 fine. I don't know how that's going to come about, but that's what he said.
Who do you challenge that to? Like, if a bill comes in the mail from the government, how do you say like, no, I think this is incorrect? Is there anyone to go to?
I guess you appeal to higher authorities. Can you say that I am showering under my First Amendment right to freedom of expression, and yeah, therefore
I'm dancing in the shower. I'm protesting.
Yeah, people sing in the shower. That's expression.
I'm protesting.
What if you can't get
Jerry
Brown song? How miserable would that be? We'll take it up when we get back.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.org. africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back.
Meow.
So, Derek, I found the clip of Governor Jerry Brown discussing his new emergency water conservation policy. You want to hear it?
I sure do.
Can we get that played? It's about 3 minutes long.
And joining us now is Governor Jerry Brown. Do you think this will be a real wake-up call?
It is a wake-up call, and it should be for everyone, because this executive order is done under emergency power, and
it has the force
of law. Very unusual. And it's for
Grandpa Simpson
action and changes in behavior from the Oregon border all the way to the Mexican border. It affects lawns, it affects people's how long they stay in the shower, how businesses use water.
And how do you really enforce this?
Yeah.
Each water district that actually delivers water to homes and businesses, they carry it out. We have a state water board that oversees.
So it's private corporations.
It's like FedEx.
Their tax code.
Hundreds of them. And so if they don't comply, people can be fined $500 a day. Districts can go to court and get a cease and desist order. The enforcement mechanism is powerful.
Cease and desist, they could be kicked out of their
magnitude, homes. You have to change that behavior, and you have to change it substantially.
Governor, one of the criticisms of this executive order has been that you did not make the same stance on the agricultural industry, which certainly has enormous political clout in the state.
Look, I love that it's an emergency power
Los Times,
to shorten
Brown's drought
the
plan
length of
is
your
light
shower.
On growers. Sacramento growers largely spared in
just
new
as the
water
founders intended.
And a few factoids floating out there. Agriculture uses 80% of the water, but accounts for less than 2% of the economy. More water used for almond production than is used by all residents and businesses in San Francisco and Los Angeles combined.
So cut out the almonds.
So yeah, now we're going to get into the central planning of agriculture. Which crops can we grow and which can't we, right? Ban almonds.
They're pulling up vines and trees. Farm workers who are at the very low end of the economic scale here are out of work. There are
why is he so out of breath?
Areas that are really suffering. We're providing
because he's so old.
We know they're suffering, Governor. But let me look at those again. 80% of the water used by agriculture, but accounts for less than 2% of the economy. Is that true?
You bet it's true. But by the way, they're not watering their lawns.
What? How does that even make sense?
Showers, providing most of the fruits and vegetables of America, a significant part of the world.
But is there something wrong there if you're using that much water for almond production? Let me read you something else from The Economist. If water were priced properly, it is a safe bet that they would waste far less of it.
She's just a central planner with a different agenda. That's all she is.
Yeah, what does this lady have against almonds?
Would not be so severe.
Most of that is true. In the sense that anybody who's wasting water not using the latest technology, that's not very smart. But farmers are getting zero allocation from the Federal Central Water Project. And that's a big deal. That hasn't happened before.
Central now, Water Project?
Of course
project.
We could shut it off. If you don't want to produce any food and import it from some other place, theoretically you could do that. But that would displace hundreds of thousands of people, and I don't think it's needed. There are farmers who have senior water rights. Some people have a right to more water than others.
See, it's jobs. That's why.
That's built into the legal framework.
We have to grow almonds because jobs.
And yes, if things continue.
Did you hear? He said some people have a right to more water than others.
Governor, what does this mean in terms of food prices for the rest of the country?
Well, some people are more equal.
A global market in many food commodities, and that will tend to set the price. But remember, the weather this afternoon.
Wait, he knows how prices are set?
That weather will be reflected and show up in other parts of the world. I can tell you from California, the climate change is not a hoax. We're dealing with it, and it's...
Okay. All right. Well, climate change is not a hoax. I guess that's all he had to say about that.
I guess that was the end of the clip. That was from ABC News. And
yeah, just fascinating to me. Like, under emergency powers, we need to drastically change people's behavior from the Oregon border to Mexico. Now, how does... Oh, he means the California-Oregon border. He doesn't mean the other Oregon border. Okay. But...
He's getting handsy with Oregon. I
mean, to me, it's just fascinating that it's like... We're going to shorten people's showers. We're going to affect how much they can water their lawn.
And, he said you have to change that behavior. It's such a like a paternal, like I'm your dad, the government type mentality. Ew. Okay, go away, guy. I don't know where you came from or who gave you the authority to tell me how long of a shower I can take, but...
It seems like the problem is really that California is too green. We should really just start like burning, you know, plants we're not using so that they don't suck up the water table, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's the centrally planned way to do it.
I wonder what Jerry Brown's lawn looks like. I wonder if this applies to him. Because normally when politicians create new laws, they are exempt. So maybe his lawn is looking a little shabby lately or something, or I don't know if... He's just concerned about his neighbor's lawns catching up with his or something, but he wants to have an unfair advantage in the lawn department.
Well, I'm looking at pictures of his house. He has a pool, it appears. But for the most part, it looks like it's, you know, desert plants and succulents and things like that. It doesn't look like he uses a whole lot of water.
That pool is filled with Jell-O. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe it's vodka. Who knows? I mean, like,
yeah, but your state doesn't have its own vodka. New Hampshire's governor, because Jerry Brown's the governor, right?
Yeah, he is.
So, our governor, Maggie Hassan, actually has her own brand of vodka. It's the state vodka.
The old man in the mountain vodka, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the activists here in Keene, when Maggie Hassan came to visit Keene State College, actually got his flask of vodka signed, one of the official New Hampshire Man in the Mountain bottles signed by the governor.
Well, you know, the Man in the Mountain vodka, that's a fundraiser. Did you know that?
No.
The profits from the sale of that is meant to restore dilapidated flags in the New Hampshire State Capitol.
Oh, thank goodness. Who will think of the flags? This has been a real concern for many years, I'm sure.
Yeah, I kind of poke fun at the New Hampshire vodka thing in Survivor Max 2. Max finds a bottle of it, which he uses as an antiseptic, and he sort of jokes about how the purpose of it was to repair these dilapidated flags, but of course the state, even with a monopoly, couldn't turn a profit, and so that never happened.
Yeah, I'm actually banned from all New Hampshire liquor stores for life.
So wow, really?
So I can't pick up any vodka.
Well, you'll have to turn to other recreational substances.
Well, I can't think of any that that I could procure with prohibition and everything. It would just be impossible to have any sorts of alternatives.
You know, I wonder how Jerry Brown would measure up in a debate against Vermin Supreme.
Jerry Brown? I don't know. Do they even have...
Yeah, Governor Jerry Brown.
Do they have debates that Vermin can enter, or does he just show up and impose himself, or how's that all work?
They should. Yeah. There should be a law. He should be in every debate for every office until he's elected somewhere.
I agree with that. I can't think of an argument against it, but I don't think there's... I'm sad because you're reminding me. I don't think there's going to be a debate on Wednesday. Like, Rand just is showing up, I think, for one of his like tours, like, I'm not running for president, but hello, first state to vote in the primaries. It's good to meet y'all. I think he's doing one of those. Like, waving at people. Why do they go to these small town places to wave at people? Like, is that really how you win political elections? You like stop by at every little podunk town and wave and say, hi, I'm a conservative. And then the people will vote for you because they're like, I saw that guy. I met him. I trust him. I would have a beer with him.
Yeah, he came and he smiled at me and he was, you know, wearing slightly scuffed dress shoes. And
he was nice. Whatever. And he said he hates the gays, too.
I don't know what it takes to win an election. Oh, does he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, Rand, he's against gay marriage. So, you know, that's cool. I mean, I don't need his endorsement.
Well, I don't want marry a man then.
Yeah. I don't think he doesn't go on any sort of tirade against it. Like, he is libertarian in the sense, but that's his position on it.
Well, he probably handles it the same way Ron Paul did, right? Where it's like, if it wasn't a constitutional issue, he just said it was a state's issue and then didn't address it.
Yeah. I think that's generally what he says, but he has a little more courage in the sense, and maybe a little less political savvy in the sense that he just came right out and said how he felt about it. I'm pretty sure. I don't have the quotes on him being like, I hate the gays, but I think that's generally his sentiment. I think he sort of plays that up for effect to win conservative votes. I think that's still a positive opinion to hold if you're trying to win a Republican office. You know, fortunately or unfortunately.
Why can't they just have their own opinions? I mean, this is sort of why I can't follow this stuff anymore. I have no idea what they're saying just because they think it'll win them some, like, poll opinion and what's really their opinion or what they're really going to do or what they're just saying that they're going to do because they think it'll win them some obscure niche voting block. Like, I can't.
But politicians are professional opinion holders, right? Like, I want the guy with my opinion to be in office is what most people think.
But that's so absurd because not everyone has the same opinion. So you're either, I guess, are you hoping that somehow democracy is validating your, like, obscure and arbitrary opinion? Majority of people also share that opinion and therefore voted for them? What does this even mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
What's that? Is that the
this
central screwdriver?
This is furries. This is the Fiend Phone Unnecessary Random Re-Education Interruption Exigency System. It's a test of it. You guys are doing a great job. I'm really proud of you. And I hope I get better soon. But I sent you some lyrics you should read. You really should read them. Maybe in the next segment. But, you know, they're great. They're from 1979.
The Dead Kennedys lyrics? I was about to look
They're from 1979. And they're about Jerry Brown. And as true then as it is now. Take care, brothers.
Worms. You know, I just listened to this album recently, so I'm glad that Michael brings it up. I was like, you know, everyone wears those Dead Kennedys shirts. They put them on their babies, and they're like, I'm so cool. I listen to punk music. But I didn't really know them, so I decided to get myself an education, listened to, oh gosh, I forget the name of the album, but it featured this song, California Uber Alice, and I had to look it up, like, what is this Uber Alice thing? Do you know, Davi? Are you familiar with that term?
Well, it's the German national anthem used to be Deutschland über alles. And incidentally, that song was illegal to sing in the United States during World War II because First Amendment. But we'll talk about this version of Über alles when we get back.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Meow. 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 Meow.
Meow. This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back.
Arms.
I'm going to read you a little piece of music history, which is also sort of music present. This is a song called California Uber Alles, which is by the Dead Kennedys and came out in 1979 when Governor Brown was governor of California the first time. I don't know if you know this, but Governor Brown was the governor of California from 1975 to 1983 and then again from 2001 to present. And a lot of people thought that it was his son when they saw Brown on the ballot, but no, it's the same guy. So this song about Jerry Brown from the 70s is as true today as it was in the 70s.
And I want to point out that when I was saying I didn't know what Uber Alles was, I did look it up, and it means like above everything. And you said, Davi, that it was the German national anthem.
Yeah, the German national anthem used to be Deutschland über alles, or Germany overall.
But now it's California overall.
Yeah, it's sort of like calling it the Soviet Socialist People's Republic of California. Like I joke like that sometimes, but California über alles is just as good. I mean, fascism and communism, they're like just a hair's width apart. So, you know. But this goes, I am Governor Jerry Brown. My aura smiles and never frowns. Soon I will be president. Carter power will soon go away. I will be Fuhrer one day. I will command you. Your kids will mediate in school. Your kids will mediate in school. California uber Alice.
California uber Alice.
Uber Alice. I want a shirt of this now. I think I might have to. I never really listened to the Dead Kennedys, but I definitely listened to this song.
Does one already
exist? I feel like as a California resident, I should have a California uber Alice shirt.
I'm Googling it. Or what's the term? I'm ducking it. The duck go.
I don't know.
I'm quacking it.
I thought people smart paged things now.
I'm smarting it. I don't know what the,
are you bingoing the, it?
Yeah.
Are you?
No, there really isn't a California Uber Alice shirt that exists already.
Well, that's never stopped me before.
Yeah, no, I think that should be your green light.
So next stanza is Zen fascists will control you, 100% natural. You will jog for the master race. You will always wear the happy face. Close your eyes. It can't happen here. Big bro on white horse is near. The hippies won't come back, you say. Mellow out or you will pay. Mellow out or you will pay. California Uber Alice.
California Uber Alice.
Now it is 1984. Knock, knock at your front door. It's the suede denim secret police. They have come for your uncool niece. Come quietly to the camp. It's not cool to be uncool, man.
Yeah, that's not allowed.
This line is gruesome. I don't know if this means what I think it means, but I think it means something really gruesome. But it's come quietly to the camp. You'd look nice as a drawstring lamp. Don't you worry. It's only a shower for your clothes. Here's a flower. Here's a pretty flower. Now, you'd look nice as a drawstring lamp is so dark.
Yeah.
So like a drawstring lamp is sort of like these weird hippie lampshades. But you'd look nice as a drawstring lamp, I think, is a reference to Nazi Germany making lampshades out of Jewish skin, which is just so gruesome.
That's but really dark. It is. Yeah, but they had to include it. They're punk rock.
Yeah, that's true. So die on organic poison gas, serpent's egg already hatched. You will croak, you little clown, when you mess with President Brown. And lo and behold, not only was he, you know, he did not only had presidential aspirations in 1984, which is what this song was about, he has presidential aspirations for 2016. If you go to his Wikipedia page, there's a section called Political Future, which in my opinion shouldn't have been written yet. But it says... Brown had been speculated to run for Democratic presidential nomination of 2016, and he had expressed interest in doing so long before that, particularly if Hillary Clinton did not run. Although now Hillary Clinton is going to run, but you know, when has party loyalty ever stopped a politician from trying to gobble up power? So
I don't know. Sometimes they wait their turn. They consult with the other politicos in secret, and then they're like, "Okay, is it your turn? Are you going to run this year? Am I going to do it? Am I going to set you up?" I think they do it like a sports team. Like, you know, I'll pretend I'm going to be there. It'll be a fake out, and then you'll be there ready with the layup.
Yeah, there you go. It's the assist.
Yeah. The political equivalent of the assist. How do they keep score?
Right.
It's whoever has the house.
For political assists?
Well, no. Like, whoever has the house is on offense, and whoever's in the minority is on defense.
There you go. We'll come back in hour number two. This is the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Yeah.
Meow.
Yeah.
Meow, meow, meow.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beastlick Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, funny thing, I was saying mediate instead of meditate. The line in the song was, your children will meditate in class.
Yeah, it would be great if they would mediate in class. What's wrong with meditation, though? Why is that a negative thing in this sense?
It's not really. It's that it's imposed. Like, there's nothing really wrong with meditation or mediating in class. It's just that the idea is in the song, all of these things are imposed because these are the sort of cultural values of California. Like the line 100% natural. There's nothing particularly wrong with 100% natural, but if you're sending somebody a $500 fine every day that they make something 99% natural, it's kind of a problem.
Or the line, I thought this was strange, die on organic poison gas. like California values are, well, you can die, but it better be organic poison gas. We're really concerned about that. And there was one other one. Oh, I forgot to
mention. Like the EPA makes military contractors redesign their intercontinental ballistic missiles because the propulsion system wasn't freon-free, and freon was discovered to be an environmental hazard. So environmentally friendly intercontinental ballistic missiles, that's what the EPA is good for.
Makes sense. Another one is like, they have come for your the secret police have come for your uncool niece. And
yeah,
that's another cultural value in California, like be cool or get out.
Yeah.
Although
we're like
that's
the center of the hipster movement.
That's a culture I could live with. I mean, although cool, I guess, is relative. Like, I think a lot of the weirdos in New Hampshire are kind of cool. And most people
well,
would probably
weird
think
is cool. That's the thing.
Yeah.
The weirdos won.
Yeah.
They turned pro.
Good job, weirdos.
So, you want to talk about Edward Snowden?
Yeah. So, this happened today, and it was bittersweet because I read this news story that some artists had put up a bust of Edward Snowden, the man who was in, like, not an official NSA agent. I guess he was a contractor with the NSA. And so, he had certain information about what the federal government could collect in terms of like privacy information of Americans and people around the world. He revealed this information to Glenn Greenwald and of the Telegraph, and I think he was the Telegraph, right? And you know, this information spread around the world. It was a pretty big deal. Still, a lot of people don't know who Edward Snowden is, though, and some artists decided to memorialize him in a park in Brooklyn. There's a statue that already existed there that was just sort of an obelisk with a flat top. And so it was sort of asking for an addition. It's called, help me out here, Davi, something like Veterans Memorial 1.0 or something they call it. I'm not quite sure.
What's called Veterans Memorial 1.0?
Like the original statue that they put Edward Snowden on top of. Like
the obelisk or whatever?
Yeah, like the obelisk that was already there. It was called
this says
Martyrs
it was called
Monument.
The Prison Ship Martyrs Monument.
Yeah, the Martyrs Monument. So he is a martyr, and it's the perfect place for a person like Edward Snowden. You know, of course, he left his comfortable life working as a government agent, probably a pretty sweet pension, probably some pretty good income. He was living in Hawaii, had a hot girlfriend, and he left all that, not knowing what the future would bring, left the country and divulged this information to the public. Really, is a sacrifice. Like, I don't value altruism in that sense. Like, I'm a bit Ayn Randian in that I think he should be looking out for himself. But this was a benevolent, altruistic act of self-sacrifice. Like, I don't know what could happen to me. I'm a government agent revealing some pretty serious secrets, and people who do these things usually end up in prison for the rest of their lives, or running from government agents for the rest of their lives, which it looks like that's going to be his fate. So anyway, some artists memorialized him. They put up a bust in this park in Brooklyn earlier this morning, and it was already...
This is guerrilla, right? This isn't like activists petition their government to have this monument put in, right? Like, this is a...
Yeah, they did it in the dark of night. The artists had a statue made. It's a bust of Edward Snowden. Looks of the same quality material. It really fits in with the rest of the statue. It's like a bronzed patina statue, a little bit faded, and the hair even sort of matches the style that the feathers are done in, and the eagle below him that was part of the original. So it's really great art. I think by any measure, people would say that this is a beautiful installation. Yeah. And, you know, it fits just so perfectly. They used an adhesive to bond the bust to the obelisk. I think because they expected that it would probably be removed and they didn't want to damage the obelisk. Like, they could have cemented it there, right? And that would have made it a lot more permanent. But I think that would be, it would be clearer that they were causing some sort of damage to this property. Whereas it can't even be argued that they have caused any harm to anyone at this point. I don't think. They've just beautified the park. They've added their own addition. And as Ian Freeman of Free Talk Live pointed out earlier today on the radio, he said that, of course, public parks are for the public, right? So if everyone pays for them, everyone has claim over them. It's sort of a tragedy of the commons situation. Like, no one has, if we're to believe the line that the public parks are ours and are shared by all the people, then every person would have the right to add whatever art installation they thought would be fitting there, wouldn't they?
Wouldn't that be a fun park?
I think so. I think that would be really cool to be a part of. But apparently these government bureaucrats disagreed, and they donned
their... It looks like they came and put a tarp over it.
Yeah, a beautiful new tarp. which they secured with...
Right, because the real crime being committed here is what it looks like, see? So looking at it, they're thwarting the being able to see it.
Well, that's like, just...
It's so funny what their priority is.
No, that's just like the equivalent of putting a bag over someone's head before you hang them, so you can't see the face, because they eventually did take the statue down. It has since been removed as of, I think, 1 p.m. today. So it was only up for a few hours. But the cool thing about the internet is that because people took pictures and Vines and Instagrams and videos, it's already been immortalized. So it's a shame that the people of Brooklyn can't enjoy the statue in their park on their daily commute or whatever. But we can enjoy the statue from anywhere in the world via the power of the internet.
Oh, no, I really think the tarp is telling. Because here's the thing, like, if it's just about, like, oh, this doesn't really belong here, we should remove it, then you just, you remove it when you get around to it. Like, the fact that you feel the urgency to cover it up means that there's something, like, embarrass or ego punching about it, that you have to actually obscure the image of it before you can, like, organize the manpower to physically remove it, right?
Yeah.
It means that it's the message of the thing that is more damaging than the presence of the thing.
Well, the people who are doing this, like, they both have government shirts on, so it looks like they're government agents of some kind, but they don't appear to be very high up. Like, they're not wearing suits, okay? They appear to be, like, custodians of the park. And
yeah,
I would imagine they were just given some order and figured out the best way to follow it. Like, all right, get rid of that thing, Joe. Okay, you know, what am I going to do? First of all, I guess I'll cover it up. And, you know, then I'll, like, call in whoever's off today and ask them to bring their saw. I don't know how they removed this thing. I guess you'd have to heat up the adhesive, but whatever. Why did they even take it down in the first place? It seems like a waste of time. It's a beautiful statue. I guess the message they have to send is that people can't do this. They don't want to invite more.
Did you ever see the video? I think it's called Guerrilla Public Service, and it's of an artist in Los Angeles who decided that this particular on-ramp needed a better sign. And so rather than petitioning the government, he made a perfect replica of a government sign and then installed it himself with a sort of fake construction company in broad daylight. And it was up for like 6 months before anybody realized that it wasn't a government sign. And
cool.
When the Department of Transportation finally figured it out, they said, hey, that was a pretty good suggestion, and they left it there. And or maybe they replaced it with their own sign. I don't know. But the point is, they took his suggestion. They weren't like embarrassed by the egg on their face to the point that they went and threw a tarp over the sign. You know what I mean? So, like, I kind of wish that there was more of that kind of culture in some of these bureaucracies to sort of say, like, yeah, you know, maybe this person does deserve a memorial. Maybe this was a good thing that happened, and just because it didn't happen through your official channels doesn't mean that it has to be undone.
I think one of the most telling parts about this is, like, it's not about honor or respect for the original memorial, because the first government agent to put a tarp over the statue actually uses the eagle from the original statue, stands on its head in order to climb up to the top of this new Snowden statue. So here he is, like, doing something that he would probably chase off some regular bystander or submittisan and say, hey, you can't stand on there.
$500 fine.
Yeah, but he is allowed to stand on top of the eagle's head as he covers up the new statue. It's just really weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my story. I'm loving it. I like that there were news stories about it. One of the other things that happened is, I think it makes people more aware of Edward Snowden. It sort of keeps him in the news. And, like, the guy is not important. It's not as important as the facts that he revealed. So I'm not even very upset that, like, his memorial was defaced or whatever. Because, like, him as a person is not as important as the information that he shared, that the government has the power to basically spy on you at all times. And that was important to find out. Even if some people were already suspicious of it, like, now, thanks to Edward Snowden, we have proof.
Did you see Citizen 4?
Yes.
What do you think of it?
I thought it was great. So Citizen 4 is the movie about Edward Snowden. It was like a documentary that was produced by one of the only two people who came into contact with him when he was in Hong Kong in hiding from the government and revealing these documents for the very first time. I thought it was incredible, but missed on a lot of important points. Maybe we could get to that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after this trip to the market.
With Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, there's some Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
buttons.
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back. We were talking about Citizen 4. You were saying it didn't cover some of the issues you wanted to cover. What do you have in mind?
Yeah, so Citizen 4 was awesome because it shared the behind-the-scenes look at Snowden the Man. But I was just saying, Snowden the Man is not important. You know, like, it's his revelations that are. And the movie didn't really cover that in as great detail as I would have hoped. It was pretty confusing for me.
It didn't cover the revelations itself.
Correct. Yeah, it just covers who Snowden is. And it sort of, like, assumed that the viewer already knew all the things about the revelations. Like, it touched on a couple of topics. But it presupposed the viewers were already informed, and they instead were focused on who is this guy and what's he like and what's his girlfriend like and what's he do to get ready to go outside, or to, you know, does he hide his face, or there's all kinds of interesting things that are revealed about his private life. But ultimately, his private life isn't what interests me about Edward Snowden. It's the information that he revealed.
Right.
So I could have used more of that.
It felt kind of raw to me, too.
Yeah.
Like, the production value of it seemed kind of raw, and it was kind of short. Like, it was sort of light on the content. I don't know. I'm hesitant to criticize it, because I think it was really good, and I think it was important, and people should go and see it, and all that. But yeah, I wonder if that means that there's a demand out there for another documentary that is more of a like summary of the impact of Edward Snowden.
The impact? A summary of the impact? I don't know. Yeah. I'm less interested in that. I want to see a documentary that says, that takes all of the revelations so far, of which, I mean, what have there been thousands of pages of documents revealed, and analyzes them. Mm-hmm. Puts them together in a way that is like a movie, that you can digest this material. I mean, these revelations have been coming out for, what, since 2013? It's been 2 years, almost. And they continue to come out now through The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald's new project. So it is just dizzying mm-hmm. to try and follow all of the things that are coming out about what the government is doing. And I just want someone to tell me from beginning to end, because I start to forget, like, what was the first one? X Key Score was one of the first ones.
You know, it would
about.
Have to just be, the only real way to do it would be to make a documentary about those years of American history, except to actually present what actually happened in those years in American history. Like, there's no other way to do it, like, one story at a time.
Yeah, no. You wouldn't want to do it one story at a time. I guess you would just tell the story of what was happening from 2000. Like, I guess the story does sort of begin around.
It would come off
2000.
Like The Godfather. You would have to write like this epic trilogy of like the rise and fall of various bureaucrats and politicians and all their nasty meddlings, and like it would just come off like a mafia movie, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm already bored just thinking about it. I don't want to see a movie like that. Like, I'm sure it would be interesting, but I just want to get over it. Like, can we just let the government collapse in its own footprint and move on? I'm not concerned with what the NSA is doing, and I know that might like shock a lot of people, like, oh, you know, it's bad. And I'm all for the project in Utah, like, turn their water off so the NSA can't cool down their supercomputers that are spying on you. But I just feel like the way forward is to empower yourself to learn tools of encryption, to develop your own world of privacy, reclaim privacy for yourself rather than like demanding it from government. Like, hey, government, stop spying on me. Well, fat chance that's going to happen. So you better just
stop
learn to protect yourself.
Stop being such a government already.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that. There's a kind of, it's almost like a burnout or a, I don't know, I guess it's the old frog in the teapot thing, but there's a point at which I just don't have the bandwidth to get upset about everything anymore. And part of it is, too, that I'm not surprised by it as much as I used to be either. Like, to me, it's all kind of par for the course. And for me, the shocking part these days is more the fact that other people are still surprised by a lot of these things.
Yeah. Do you remember the U.S. spy rocket that the NSA built that had the creepy octopus patch on it? The logo beneath the it was a patch that the National Intelligence Agency produced with an octopus gripping the earth, and below it the text, "Nothing is beyond our reach."
Wow. I don't recall seeing that, but I'm going to find it during the break. We'll be back after this.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we are back.
Freedom Fiends.
What were we talking about? We promised something when we got back. I don't remember what it was.
Free candy.
We were talking about Edward Snowden. Free candy. It was free candy. There's no such thing as free candy.
We'll find out Wednesday. Vermin Supreme is apparently giving out free candy at the Rand Paul event. I'm excited. I don't know.
Well, if anyone can give out free candy, it's him.
I wonder, like, where... I guess I'd prefer politicians spend their campaign cash on candy than, like, advertisements on television. But they don't choose to do that. Why not? I guess they decide it's better spent on radio ads, but...
Yeah, I would much rather be bribed with something I could keep.
Yeah, give me candy instead. I don't want your advert. Something real, something tangible, something that's going to help me today, like your candy.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Send a V-mask to everyone in the whole country. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Are any politicians working on that? They've got campaign teams hard at work right now. Trying to send V-masks to everybody. I heard it said that V-masks are the modern-day equivalent of the tinfoil hat. I would agree with that.
Why would that be? Isn't the tinfoil hat thing is a paranoid orbital mind control laser thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but I sort of feel that way about people who wear V-masks. And I know I'm saying that in a room with two of them. There's, you know, my friend Ian has a couple of V-masks. I have one. But they are sort of reminiscent of the tinfoil hat of the modern day, because I feel like the people who wear them are like,
I feel like it's this generation's Gadsden flag. Like, it's just sort of like a symbol of protest with no particular direction of what they're protesting against or what they're in favor of.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm just as likely to hear someone wearing a V-mask complain about the bankers as I am to hear them complain about chemtrails.
Like, yeah.
I don't... That's why I call them tinfoil hat people.
Okay. Well, you know, the movie was delightfully nonspecific as to what the crimes of the government were, right? Like, the only actual crimes in the film are the ones that are personally against V and their weird experiments on him, right? So a person who has any problem with the government can adopt those symbols. It's sort of like the Matrix. It's like, it's just a metaphor you can drape over whatever it is you're upset about.
Yeah. But speaking of, like, Citizen Four, the movie, I saw it in a small theater in Boston, and one of the things I noticed about it was just that I enjoyed the company of the people I was around a lot more. And I don't know if it was just my imagination, or the fact that it was so close to MIT, but I just figured these are, like, these are smart people, you know, these are people who care. These are people who are here to watch a movie to learn about a hero of mine. And,
yeah.
So I just enjoyed that a lot more than just being in a room full of people watching Despicable Me 2 or something. You know, it's not a shared experience of we're all here to laugh. It's like we're all here to learn something important. That was cool.
Yeah, I hear that. It's also sort of a mutual admiration. Like, I imagine the first wave of people who saw the film were all people who did know who Snowden was.
Yeah.
Or is. And in that sense, maybe it isn't necessary to have included it in the film, although for the second wave of people that watched it, didn't it win an Oscar or something?
Yeah. Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature.
There you go. A lot of the people that saw it because it won this award probably don't know that much about the controversy and the revelations and the whole history of it, so...
Well...
I don't know.
There's always more time for more documentaries. I've been thinking about making one about the thrift store. Not a documentary per se, but a reality TV show. So tell me what you think about this. I work at a libertarian-owned thrift store, owned by James Robin Hood Cleveland, who's known throughout the Shire as being the man behind the parking meter feeding that's been going on.
And anyone who watches Comedy Central, right? He's the mastermind.
Yeah, he's, that's right. He was recently featured on The Colbert Report before that went off the air. In one of the final episodes, James is featured as the mastermind behind the Robin Hood of Keene parking enforcement strategy. I don't know. He has a team of people who go around and feed parking meters out of the goodness of their heart, and they save people from getting tickets. And I think that's great. That's great work.
It's a valuable public service.
Yeah, people appreciate it. They don't mean to let their meters expire. They don't want the threats that their car will be taken. But anyway, that's in the past. He's moved on. He's, you know, of course, that's still going on in Keene, but his newest adventure is starting a business. And, like, what greater celebration of freedom and the entrepreneurial spirit than moving to New Hampshire and starting your own business? Like, that's really cool. And the realization of a dream, I think, for him and for many people involved, myself included. So I want to document this, and I have been. I carry a video camera around. I document my whole life pretty much all the time, every day. And so I've got all of this footage of the business from start to finish opening up. And, well, not finished. We're still going. But, you know, interesting things will happen. This code enforcer will come by, or there are sometimes haters. Like, there's a local hate group, Stop Free Keene, and they had a local boycott of the store. There are some like anti-activists who will drive by and honk, and it gets personal at times. There are tears. There's already been a separation in the business.
You could do it as a sequel to Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree and call it James Cleveland's Victimless Thrift Store.
Yeah, I am thinking something like that. Like, it needs to, you know, Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. I enjoyed making that, and it left me with desire to make another. Like, there needs to be some sort of follow-up, but finding the right story for that follow-up has eluded me. And up mm-hmm. until this point, I think this might be it. This business, it's ongoing, and it's something of a victory. It's perseverance, And it's something also to encourage new movers, I would think. It would encourage people to move knowing that there's not only jobs available with libertarians working with your friends, but also that people can start their own successful businesses. So it's
I wonder
a really
if you could
story.
Hit like if you could kind of like hit that vibe like Hoarders or Storage Wars or those things that are sort of about appraising people's lost junk. I don't know. What kind of stuff do you carry in this thrift store?
Oh, we have all kinds of things. And yeah, a Storage Wars thing is really what I'm envisioning, because we do go to storage auctions at times and make bids, and sometimes you get junk and sometimes you get something really exciting, but we have all kinds of things. And it would be great to just have a fly on the wall sort of video and audio recording of some of the customers that come in. So, for example, an old woman was driving looking for a town nearby just down the road and was asking for directions. So while I was pulling up some directions on the computer for her, she points up the wall and notices that we've got a BB gun, a pellet gun behind me, and says, "Oh, can I see that gun?" So it's like the 70-year-old woman with a cane just stopped in for directions, ends up walking out with the directions and a gun. And it's just one of the cool things that can happen in New Hampshire.
That's cool.
Yeah, I really dig it, the mentality of people. And she bought it for her grandson. She was like the exact opposite of the mother from A Christmas Story, you know, "You'll shoot your eye out, kid."
You'll it was shoot like, your eye out.
Yeah. "Let me get that for my grandson. That would be great for him to shoot his eye out," you know, or something like that. So I really dig the mentality, the culture of people out here. And I just feel like it could be the subject of a fun documentary.
I would watch it.
Yeah. So that's what's going on.
Cool.
We also just expanded. Like, one thing you can't really show as much, or maybe it would be a challenge to show, because the thrift store is just one aspect of the business. There's also an eBay component as well. We exist online as well as in person. So, you know, figuring out the behind the scenes of eBay has been interesting, because like eBay is a brand new thing on the scale of human history. It's like this open garage sale. And
yeah,
I don't know. You operate it totally differently than you do a thrift store, which is like an indoor garage sale.
Yeah, I've used eBay quite a bit, but I don't find it all that intuitive, and so it's difficult to keep up with it.
What do you mean, for buying or selling? For selling?
For selling. Like I put shinybadges.com stuff up there from time to time, and I find it's a lot of clicking and searching for what needs to be filled out. I don't find that it's that easy to just sort of throw things up there quickly or to like reuse old listings. I don't find it very intuitive.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And the fee structure is complicated too. I don't like the fee structure.
Yeah, I never know what it's going to cost to put something up online. It can be very confusing.
Well, it's different for different sections is the issue. So depending on how you categorize a thing, the fee structure will be a certain way. Plus, they have a whole like you are not allowed to sell Bitcoin on their site. And so if you use the word Bitcoin in your listing, it'll flag it as being like, "No, you're not allowed to do this." And I'm like, "Well, I'm not selling Bitcoin. I'm selling a Bitcoin T-shirt." Like, there ought to be some sort of an exemption for this sort of thing. But no, it's, you know, it's just a robot, so there's no arguing with it.
It would be nice. I would hope that companies in the future will have sort of like a robotic interface persona. Like, you know, companies like Progressive have that character Flow.
Yeah.
And like,
Dell used to have Steve.
Yeah, exactly. And I imagine a figurehead like that sort of providing a digital FAQ and answering questions, like a preliminary screening before you call up the 1-800 number or something, like, "Hey, can I help you with something? You know, I can answer most questions." And, you know, I would want to sell my items through eBay with this other guy helping me rather than just like staring at this blank screen with all these clicky radio boxes that I don't know what I'm doing.
Sure. I guess it's just a matter of time. I mean, I tend to find, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm doing something and most users aren't like unusual things with a lot of services, or I'm not sure why, but I usually find things that are not in people's Q&As and I have to call them up and ask them. But I don't know why.
It's because you think outside the box.
So we will be back. It's true. I'm an unusual cat. And we'll have more after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been using Block It Pocket, and I love it. Block It Pocket protects your cell phone, tablet, or laptop from remote tracking and data theft. I've tested it. It works. Put your cell phone inside, call from another phone, and the phone in the Block It Pocket won't ring because all signals in and out are blocked. Avoid calls and texts at the wrong moment. Keep your location private. Protect passports and credit cards. Water-resistant, hand-washable, and stylish in many designs. Go to blockitpocket.com. That's blockitpocket.com.
Beans.
It's all true. Every word of it.
Worms.
Yeah. So, worms, Davi.
Definitely worms. I think the coolest thing about the Edward Snowden thing and the, Guerrilla Public Service thing and a number of other sort of projects that I've seen like that throughout my life are that they're not asking for permission. They're sort of like reclaiming the culture. Like, the idea of a public park and art in a public park was that it was supposed to be a reflection of the society, right? Like, that's what they sort of lead you to believe. And then when it's not, I really like the idea that people take it upon themselves to reclaim it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, like the government will tell you that a public park is for everybody and everybody owns it. And then when you realize that's not true, you can produce art and put it there in the park. Like these people
have
done. Not
just the ownership of the park, but also the idea that the highest value in the society is the martyrs of some forgotten conflict, And that's not really true. Like, society has a lot of other values besides just, venerating people who, died because politicians told them to go and die. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Art, like what Banksy does, I don't know. I feel like that has a way of really changing the way people see the world, because Banksy will take everyday regular places and put up like political statements on them, and that gets to people who are like regular people. It brings it down to where the people are, putting things in regular parks, and not focusing on major installations, not like putting, he doesn't tag this Empire State Building, for example. He puts his tags in regular places, and I feel like that influences the culture a lot more, because it's not tourists who are seeing it, it's the people who live here every day.
Yeah, for sure. And they're not asking for a government grant.
No, they've put up some of their own serious cash. I mean, it couldn't have been cheap for these artists to produce this installation, only to enjoy it for a couple of hours. But somehow they made the calculation and they thought it would be worth it to them. I mean, apparently this thing was built in California and shipped all the way to New York. I'm not quite sure what the cost was on that, but couldn't have been cheap to send like a couple hundred pounds of metal all the way across the country. And then
might have even been cheaper to drive it themselves.
Yeah, maybe they did. I'm not quite sure. But then to organize the people to do this in the cover of darkness at night. I mean, presumably they were unpaid artists, but still, it's a sacrifice of time and money. It costs something to produce this art. And there's an opportunity cost as well, because they could have been doing other things. Not running for politics, because that's not going to change things as much as their art is.
Yeah. I feel like we need another term, because I'm kind of with you. Like, the word sacrifice kind of, like, sullies it in a sense, because it is...
It's cost. Maybe that's the word. That's a libertarian word. There's a cost.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe cost is the right word. I'm not totally sure. But it is something that they are doing for themselves, right? Like, it is, in a sense, like... I mean, I've done sort of goofy installations, right? So, like, there's a statue in San Jose that sort of looks like a pile of dog dropping. It's supposed to be Quetzalcoatl, this, like, snake, but it's, like, bronze, and it's coiled up, and it looks like dog poo. So I manufactured a series of very large papier-mâché flies, and I hung them around in the park near this coil. And it was very satisfying for me as an artist. It wasn't like a sacrifice of time. It was like an empowering thing. And so I think maybe it's not a sacrifice for artists that do this stuff, because it is, in a sense, reclaiming their own efficacy and their own culture.
Right. And
maybe that's why it's not a sacrifice.
It's not a sacrifice to do some really fun things, like stickering can be something fun and easy that you can do in your hometown to spread a peaceful message. And stickering on government property is my favorite thing to do, even though it's a felony to put stickers on federal mailboxes. I do it anyway.
A war sticker on a stop sign, that's an easy one.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your service, Derek. It's been a good show. And, I hope we'll do it again.
Rock on, man. The hamster in my brain is thoroughly calmed.